Good evening and welcome to the Arroyo Grande City Council meeting for Tuesday, December 8th, 2015. May we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Guthrie?
Here.
Councilmember Brown?
Here.
Councilmember Harmon is absent tonight. Mayor Pro Tem Barnidge?
Here.
And Mayor Hill?
Here. Please join us in a moment of reflection and a moment of silence for the innocent victims in San Bernardino. Thank you. May I have us all please rise for the flag salute, and I'll ask our police chief, Annibale, to please lead us in the flag salute.
You can all face the flag of our country. Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please be seated. Tonight I'd like to take out of order a special presentation. We have introduction and oath of office for police officers Reggie Bio and Matt Reddy. Chief?
Okay, I have to use the mic here. Thank you, everybody, for being here tonight, especially thanks to the officers that came out tonight for the swearing in. We have a ceremony we'd like to do tonight is both the badge pinning and the swearing in of the officers. So without further ado, I'd like to call the two new officers up. And they are, again, Reggie Bio, if you could come up, please, and Matthew Reedy. Get you guys right here. No, we don't. It's not pinning them like a pilot or anything like that, so it's not going to be too tough. But I'd like to do a little bio on each one of the officers, tell you a little bit about them, and we're very excited to have them join the team here in Arroyo Grande. So Reggie Bio, who's right here, was born in the Philippines and moved to Arroyo Grande when he was 3 years old. He's the oldest of three children and the only boy. Reggie's parents were sugar pea farmers, so he used to go to the farm and help out any way he could when he was younger growing up. He attended schools here in the Five Cities area, played organized football and athletics. He met his wife in high school, later encouraged him to attend Allen Hancock Police Academy in the fall of 2001. After graduating from the academy, Reggie worked security at Diablo Canyon Power Plant for 2 years. And then during those 2 years, he also was a reserve police officer for the city of Grover Beach and became a full-time police officer for them in 2004. Reggie's an experienced officer we're really pleased to have. He has worked assignments with the Grover Beach Police Department as a senior officer, a field training officer, special enforcement team member, and was the department's liaison to the county gang task force before coming to the Arroyo Grande Police Department. This part I don't like too much, but he's a diehard Oakland Raiders fan. Yeah, you got to balance these things out, I guess. But he enjoys spending time with his family, enjoys training in mixed martial arts, so I guess I better be nice, competing in several amateur boxing and Thai boxing matches. Reggie married his high school sweetheart, who is an attorney, and they have two children, a girl and a boy. And so before I call Shannon up to pin his badge, I just want to let these guys know there's a few things they'll be getting tonight, but I'm not going to put them in their hands yet until they're pinned. Tonight they'll be getting their identification for the department. They, of course, have their badge pinned tonight. But the one I always like to mention that's most important, so I'm making sure you guys see, inside your packet is a letter of expectations from the chief of police, what we expect of officers in Arroyo Grande. So we want to make sure you take that out and look at it, maybe tomorrow. So without further ado, we'd like to invite Shannon up for the badge pinning. And if I can get you to hold your applause until we do the swearing in, that probably would be best. Good luck. Didn't yell, so that's good. Thank you. Okay. I'd like to introduce Matthew Reedy, a newest member of our department. Matt was born and raised in the San Francisco Bay Area. I guess I'll have to ask you later about who you root for. Who recruited these guys? And is the oldest of four children in his family. Matt moved down to San Luis Obispo in 2009 and attended Cal Poly, where he obtained his Bachelor's of Science degree in Business Administration. After graduating in 2013, he had the unique privilege of finding a job that allowed him to stay on the Central Coast, which a lot of Cal Poly students try to do, I know. Matt worked for a local bank here in Arroyo Grande for 2 years before following his dream of becoming a police officer and was accepted to the Basic Law Enforcement Academy, also at Allen Hancock College. Matt will actually have his formal graduation with Class 109 this Thursday, December 10th. So he's getting sworn in just before the graduation, which is pretty exciting. Matt, you too will be receiving both your badge and identification tonight and that letter of expectation, so don't forget that. And I want to invite Matt's fiance, Ashley, up to pin his badge on. Don't worry, we give them instructions before. Great. Thank you. And now I'd like to call our city clerk, Kelly Wetmore, up for the formal swearing in.
After me. I state your name. Do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California, that I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties upon which I am about to enter.
Thank you, and thanks to all the members of the department that are here this evening. Item 5 is agenda review. We have no closed session announcements. Can we move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and all further readings be waived?
So moved.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Passes unanimously 4-0 with one absent. We've had our special presentation, and this brings us to community comments and suggestions. Any member of the public who would like to address the council on any item that is not on the agenda this evening is welcome to do so at this time. For those items that are on the agenda this evening, we'll have time before each of those items is addressed, and we'll entertain public comment on those items at that time. The council cannot respond to items generally that are not on the agenda, and we would respectfully request that you limit your comments to 3 minutes. So if anyone would like to address the council right now on items that are not on the agenda this evening. Linda?
Thank you, Mayor Hill and council members. Lord, send down upon the members of our council the power to make wise decisions. Grant them wisdom, insight, and vision. People from around the world are coming together and recognizing shared threats to peace and prosperity. Among all people of goodwill, God protect and bless our leaders, our troops, our law enforcement, and our citizens. Lord, in this holy season of prayer, song, and laughter, we praise you for the great wonders you have sent us. For shining star, an angel's song, for an infant's cry in a lowly manger, we praise you for the word made flesh in a little child. We behold his glory and are bathed in its radiance. Be with us as we sing the joys of Christmas, the helpless babe who cracks the world asunder. We kneel before you, shepherds, innkeepers, wise men. Help us to rise bigger than we are. Amen. Thank you. And just one little tiny announcement yet. This Saturday, the Pismo Beach Five Cities Rotary Club is holding their third annual Christmas movie. The doors open at 10, and the movie starts at 11. It's at the Fair Oaks. It's called Miracle on 34th Street. And the admission is a non-perishable food item or an unwrapped toy. And I hope everybody can come. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Would anyone else like to address the council?
Mayor Hill, members of the council, I'm Dr. Martin Meltz. I'm a community volunteer and advocate for the homeless across San Luis Obispo County. I'm aware that the governing bodies of many jurisdictions in Slo County are already taking action to prepare for possible torrential flooding, cold weather, and other contingencies that may arise in the coming months due to the existence this year of very strong El Nino. I am concerned, as I believe that you are, for the health and safety of all of our residents, including those that are chronically homeless, those that are housed homeless, such as families with children living in the homes of others, where the roof structure may be poor or where the house may be in a floodplain, or who alternatively may be residents, business persons, or visitors who may be trapped in Arroyo Grande and away from their homes due to roadway flooding or blockage due to other causes. I therefore wanted to make certain that you are aware of Section 8698-8698.2 of the 2010 California Government Code, which relates to options that you have during a declared shelter crisis. As the City Council of Arroyo Grande, you have control of all city property. This code section allows you to declare a shelter crisis when there is a threat to the health and safety of a significant number of our citizens, including a significant number of homeless, and as I have suggested, when the health and safety of others is also at risk. The section allows you to declare that a shelter crisis exists, declare as shelter space any facility of a political subdivision, in this case the city, including parks, schools, and vacant or underutilized city facilities which are owned, operated, leased, or maintained, or any combination thereof by the political subdivision through money derived by taxation or assessment. You also can make those facilities available as crisis shelter space in both the day and night. The section does not mandate that you do this, but does provide you the authority to suspend existing rules and codes that would prevent you from making it happen where homeless persons would be at risk. At the same time, the section protects you from certain liabilities. As a young boy progressing through the ranks of scouting to Eagle Scout, I consistently heard the phrase, be prepared. I am asking you to do no less. I therefore ask that you immediately make staff aware of this section and also that you ask city staff to assist you in immediately creating and maintaining a database of city facilities available to serve as crisis shelters. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the comment. Would anyone else like to address the council on items that are not on the agenda this evening?
I'm Michael Bondello, 207 McKinley Street, Arroyo Grande. I received a letter from PG&E saying they're beginning installation of LED lights to replace the sodium vapor lights that we presently have. And they explained that these are brighter lights and should be able to light up the area pretty nicely. I'm also a member of the Dark Sky Association, and for 25 years they've been trying to limit light pollution in cities. The problem with excessive street lighting is that it can intrude into our backyards. And this summer, I tried to have PG&E shade a light that's down the street that shines into my backyard. And they used to do it for free. Now they charge $450 to do that. Shades exist for every street light that's out there. We could get house shades or cutoff shades, whatever. But they're putting in light-polluting LEDs that are a broader spectrum. They're more penetrating than any other kind of light. And it will basically establish a series of light pollution sources around the city that people may not want that light shining in their windows at night or in their backyards. And we should have a right to be able to ask PG&E at their expense to shade those lights appropriately for us. I also checked, and I don't see that we have a light ordinance in Arroyo Grande, and that's something that has been going on throughout the nation and the world for the last 5 years especially. International Space Station astronauts have looked down and seen that our cities are getting brighter, and that can have both social and also human health effects, as well as affecting wildlife migrations and things of that nature. So I really strongly suggest, and I've talked briefly with this with Jeff English, the city planner, that we move toward getting some kind of light pollution ordinance, but also that we hold PG&E to putting on those shades at their expense. They're the ones that are installing these, and they're the ones that are going to ultimately be the ones that are responsible for it. That's what I have to say about that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Welch.
I would like to echo what he said. I didn't know there was a charge to it. I also got the flyer from PG&E, and PG&E was gracious enough with the normal streetlights to come out and do some adjustment because it shines so brightly in my bedroom window that I had to put blackout shades. And then you don't see the sun in the morning, so you oversleep or have to set alarms. I don't think I should have to spend $450, and I'm just wondering how much it's going to light up the court on my street, because I know we have two, maybe three street lights for nine houses. The other thing I want to talk about is the communication with the city. I have written council members, and I would like to commend Kristen Barnage and Mayor Hill for always responding to my emails. Other council members have not, and that's really a shame. If I take time out of my day to contact you, even if it's just to say thank you for your email, I know you got it. I've said before, I call staff on something, and I've been told to give them weeks to get back in touch with me. I've been waiting over a month for one response. I've recently tried to set up an appointment with our city manager. Was told that unless I put it in writing, I don't get to meet with our city manager. I'm a resident of this town, and it would be nice to have better communication. With the last records request that was done on myself and a lot of other people in this town, I'm now very reluctant to put anything in writing, and I don't think that I should have to put a letter with bullet points together to meet with the city manager over issues, and that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm also concerned that I've heard of other people having the same request made for a list of topics before being asked for a meeting. That does concern me. Mr. Page.
Otis Page at 606 Middle Street. I assume you've received the letter regarding appearances that we have sent to the council and that has been published on Cal Coast News. I'm not here tonight to beg you to apologize to John Mack. You should, but that's going to be your determination. I suggest it would be the right thing to do, it being Christmas, that you are all good people. God knows the developer here, Tompkins, is a good man, and John Mack is a good man. And they all serve you greatly, as you serve us. But my main point with you tonight is not this appeal for John Mack. If the area of appearances, it appears to me, unfortunately, which is an issue we'll carry on to next year, that there was a conspiracy between the staff and certain members of the commission to scapegoat Mack. And that whole conspiracy was incited by the developer. We've reached a point now as stewards of the city, you should be at arm's length with every developer. You should be scrutinizing them, and your planning commission should be scrutinizing them the same way you scrutinize every dollar you spend. I like Tompkins. I think he's done great things for the city. I think he's been very influential to a point that has caused a problem. And that problem is the appearance of conspiracy. Now, I remind you, sitting here as an 85-year-old man, I've done some wrong things in my life. And it's so hard to admit that I've done wrong things in my life. We all do wrong things. But the test of character is to recognize them. Don't be in denial over them. And have the good spirit to recognize when you're wrong, to correct it. I ask that in the citizen's name who signed this letter, Leon Atkins and Beatrice Spencer. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to address the City Council. My name is Pat Ford. My wife and I have lived here in Arroyo Grande and Pismo Beach since 1980. I'm currently a volunteer at the food bank in Oceano in the People's Kitchen of Grover Beach, and I take food to the homeless people living south of the railroad station in Grover Beach. I've had the opportunity to talk with a number of the homeless people, most of whom are in their 20s, and have talked with them regarding their needs and concerns. I'm here tonight to advocate on behalf of the homeless and urge the city of Arroyo Grande to allow these people to be sheltered at night from our winter weather. It's easy to be critical of these individuals as a drain on society. I think we're all aware of the many factors that contribute to homelessness, illiteracy, lack of education, drug addiction, mental illness. All I can say is that rather than being judgmental, it would be far more constructive to implement a plan to help these people. They're not going away. If the city takes action to displace and evict these people, many more will come in their place. Obviously, this is a societal issue, not just a county issue. I have children, these homeless kids' ages, and I think it's safe to say we've all been down on our luck. There's an old song, the lyrics of which state that there but for fortune go you or I. Fully appreciate people's concerns regarding potential for disorderly conduct and violence, and that's what makes this proposition daunting. I think we could draw on models of other communities regarding how they implement programs to effectively care for these people. The vision I see is for a sanctuary or haven from the cold and rain during the winter months. I would be willing, and I've spoke with others who would also be willing, to work and spend one night a week at the proposed facility to house these people. And I'm sure that there are other retired men in the community who would be willing to assist. Our job would be to coordinate the sleepovers and make sure that nothing gets out of hand. I thank you for your time. God bless us and save us. Happy holiday.
Thank you very much. If I might comment just briefly on the subject, since there's been a couple commenters, that there is a group working toward a shelter here. Last year we had a shelter at the County Social Services Building on Grand Avenue, which I understand was not well suited for the purpose, and we're the group that's working on that currently is looking for a more suitable facility that has actually better facility for that, so that there is work being done. Thank you for your comment. Would anyone else like to address the council on items not on the agenda?
Hi, my name is Pat Dempsey from Arroyo Grande, and I'd like to talk about the ramps there at Briscoe. I use those ramps, well, I use that underpass every day, and traffic is moving amazingly smoothly. I think I only have to stop even during the rush hour about once every five times. And I see no reason to reopen them. I realize that this is a study they're doing, but I'd like to encourage the council to put it on their agenda to ask Caltrans to leave those closed and move forward on the plan that closes those ramps and do away with this traffic circle plan that is going to cost about $10 million more than just closing those ramps and digging them up. I ask about, you know, why isn't this on the agenda? And I found out that it takes three council members to ask that something be put on the agenda. Otherwise, the agenda, maybe I'm wrong, but it's controlled by city staff. Now, if there's five council members and it takes three to put it on the agenda, what happens when some minority issue should be on the agenda? I mean, the council members should actually allow for two council members to get it on the agenda. And I think the mayor should also, he's an elected official, the mayor should be able to get things on the agenda by himself. That's why we elect the mayor. And if the mayor can't get it on the agenda and two council members want it on the agenda, it should get on the agenda. In my view, the staff has too much control of the agenda, and that's got to be cut back. So what do you change, the bylaws? How do you get things on the agenda with fewer council members? So that's what I'd like you. I know you can't decide things, but you might be able to comment on things. Thank you.
Thank you. And in fact, I did ask for the Briscoe item a couple weeks ago to be placed on the agenda for this evening. As you see, it was not. And I'll have further comment about that later in the meeting. Would anyone else like to address the council at this time?
Good evening, council, members of the community. My name is Alex Economou, and I'm here today representing a program hosted by the Slo County APCD called Civic Spark. I recently moved here from Western Springs, Illinois, and I'm very excited to be out on the Central Coast for the first time. Over this next coming year, I'll be working a lot with the county as well as the APCD to help the city implement their climate action plan. And I just want to take a brief moment to introduce myself and just say I'm very excited to be working with you all. You have a beautiful town, and I can't wait to explore it more. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome. Mr. Holt.
Ron Holter, Royal Grandy. Last meeting, I didn't see any minutes from it, so I don't know exactly how it was dealt with. I couldn't come anyway. The issue came up, I believe, from a planning commission about marijuana growth and possibly removing it, any kind of growth from tolerance for it from in the city. And I don't partake in marijuana, but and I don't have any interest in it myself. But I just see too much public resources wasted in trying to control a substance that is basically no worse than alcohol or tobacco. For anybody other than, for adults at least. And I would like to see if you're going to control the growth of marijuana, treat it like any other agricultural product, properly zoned, fine. If not, it should possibly just, unless it's for personal use, and there may be even be some legal issues in prohibiting it for personal use for people who do it as medical marijuana. But just try and stay away from, if you could, please, from getting that into the legal system. We have enough invasive laws as it is, and I'd like to see that just kind of backed off again. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other comment on items not on the agenda?
Good evening. Shannon Dempsey, 412 Elm Street. And I also wanted to comment on Briscoe. I just think that the traffic has been moving so well through there, and I kept meaning to send an email, but I keep forgetting. So having been in an accident on that street coming down from Albertsons and everything several years ago, I think that having the traffic flow so much better, having that right turn arrow that you can just turn right and not get in line, really helps. And I really do think that we should keep those off-ramps and on-ramps closed permanently. And it was my main artery onto the freeway, so I keep going on autopilot and reminding myself I have to go to the other exit. But I think that the traffic flow is so much better that we should keep them closed. So I hope that you'll consider that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Mack.
John Mack. I just want to concur with our previous speaker. It's been night and day in terms of that underpass on Briscoe. It's way safer. I can even allow my children to ride their bike through there now. And I think keeping it closed is the right thing to do. I don't know what the study or the information back from the traffic engineer is, but it needs to be studied. But what you can see is the commercial off-ramp is being used now. That's what it was designed for in front of Walmart. It's the old park exit, and it's the right design for the commercial traffic. And I think the city is benefiting from the closure of those two ramps. The other thing I wanted to make mention, and I know the city manager is really busy and stuff, but I've been waiting 3 weeks to meet with her. And the day before we met, Kitty had canceled our meeting and didn't have, I guess, the right information before her to continue our meeting. I don't know what that's all about, but Diane, I would like to meet with you prior to Christmas, if at all possible. And I'd hate to ask City Council to schedule our meeting, but please, I'd like a return call. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Beatrice Spencer. I'd like to say I'm here to talk. I wish I had more than 3 minutes, but it's my understanding that taxpayers of Arroyo Grande have paid out more than $3 million to study, design, close, reopen, study, design, close, and possibly reopen the Briscoe off-ramps. After all this time, what have we really gotten for our money but Alt-1 and Alt-4C? To most citizens, it does not appear the city has made the best use of our tax dollars, $3 million. There seems to be no end to what former councils and staff have been willing to spend. It also does not appear that over the course of more than 10 years, we are any further along in the process of improving the Briscoe Branch El Camino traffic fiasco. Our elected officials and staff have stalled long enough, and it's now time to get something done. More than 10 years ago, I and many others attended a public forum regarding Briscoe at Grace Bible Church. Since then, the community has been patiently and anxiously waiting a viable and cost-effective solution. We are tired of paying, and we're tired of waiting. Years have passed since the off-ramps were initially closed. No one disputes that the closure was anything but a success. So here we are once again with traffic moving smoothly for the first time since the off-ramps were reopened all those years ago. Now the off-ramps are scheduled to be reopened on January 11th, which will put us back to the same traffic nightmare we've escaped these past few short months. Elections have consequences. Our former mayor, Ferraro, was voted out for a variety of reasons, one of which was his inability to wear down and convince residents we need to keep paying for something we cannot afford. The voters of Arroyo Grande have failed to approve the last three bond measures on a ballot. Please listen when we say, live within your budget. We have to. And also, we do not have enough confidence in how you spend our money to give you any more. You have a fiduciary responsibility to be fiscally prudent. You are entrusted to set policy and direct our city manager. Please direct the city manager to instruct her staff to do what is necessary, whether it be permits, etc., to extend the closure until a permanent solution is found. We do not have the money to keep chasing Ferrara's dream of Alt-4C. With a price tag of over $24 million, according to the city's own website, SlowCog does not have the money. How much potential funding are we willing to let get away when we fail to commit to the only alternative we have any chance of all of paying for? At one point, I'll be just real quick. At one point, the $6.5 million SLOCOG had allotted for this project was available, but I understand now that they may be lowering that by $1 million to $5.5 million. With a cost of $14 million for Alt 1, it's the only solution we can possibly afford. Let's move forward. And I have some pictures here before the closure that I took when I was stuck in traffic for about four signal turns.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to address the council on the items that are not on the agenda this evening? Ms. Gibson.
Hello to everyone. Shirley Gibson from Halcyon. I attend various city council meetings along with the ARC meetings, sometimes Planning Commission and Oceano Community Services District since I live in Halcyon. I'm kind of a sporadic attender, and I'm usually focused on local historical issues. Although my husband calls them my hysterical issues because he's so mad I'm at a meeting all the time. And I do serve on the Historic Resources Committee for the city. And lately I've noticed a negative trend in some of these meetings. At a recent Arroyo Grande Advisory Commission meeting last week, a member of the audience yelled from their seat at a specific commissioner. There was also clapping after certain public comments during that meeting, and other people were having conversations with each other during the meeting. Participating in local government is not the same as attending the melodrama. Clapping, chatting, yelling, etc., have no place in a public meeting. It basically shows disrespect for the mayor and or chairperson, disrespect to the rest of the board and the staff, and ultimately disrespect to the public. I think it can also intimidate other people from getting up and speaking if they feel that they're on the wrong side of an issue. And I know because I've been on the wrong side many times. If the city wants to encourage public participation, then the public, the people need to be welcomed. Members of the public do have a right to come up here and speak at the microphone, but I think sometimes it's forgotten that the audience has as much right to be able to hear what is being said by public speakers, by staff, and by the mayor and the board. And if people are chatting or whatever, it's hard to hear. And, you know, my mom and I usually sit in the back so we can make a fast escape. I'm not sure what the resolution is, but I would like to see it addressed so that we can retain a small town, congenial, adversarial community. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comment, Shirley. All of the council members have adopted the pledge of civil discourse, and hopefully that will carry forward in all meetings of where city business is conducted. I'm sure that I speak for the rest of the council on that and our commitment to that. And I agree that we respectfully request that we do have civil discourse in all of our meetings. So thank you for bringing that up. Would anyone else like to address the council at this time? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on. City manager report.
Good evening, Mayor Hill and City Council. I have several items to report on this evening. First of all, I want to give you an update on our commissions and boards and their activities. The Planning Commission met, and the Planning Commission voted 3-2 to approve the medical marijuana ordinance, recommending it for adoption, and that will be coming to Council in January. The Planning Commission also voted 3-1 with one commissioner recused to continue the proposed Village Hotel project. So that was continued to a date uncertain. And there were comments primarily upon the architecture that was proposed for that project. The Architectural Review Committee also met, and they approved on a 5-0 vote design guidelines for the Heights at Vista Del Mar subdivision project. And also, there was an architectural review and minor exception for two new mixed-use buildings on Paulding Circle. And that was approved with landscaping modifications on a 4-1 vote. There's a PG&E retrofit project, an LED retrofit project in process. It began yesterday, and PG&E anticipates they'll have that project done by the end of December. And I understand that comments from the city and residents are being collected by PG&E in terms of any potential changes and so forth. So additional information to follow on that project. Update on the dog park. Just wanted to let you know that the Elm Street Dog Park Association has officially taken over responsibility for maintenance and operation of the dog park. We're really pleased that they're able to do that. They're continuing to recruit volunteers and to solicit donations to assist with their efforts to offer a place for dogs and their owners to socialize. Car thefts in the village. Our police chief has informed me that we've had a number of car thefts recently in the village where cars have been left unlocked and people have taken things from the vehicles. And so the chief has asked me to remind our residents to keep their cars locked while shopping in the village and elsewhere. Earlier this month, I had the opportunity to tour the Hot House in San Luis Obispo, which is a startup sort of location and incubator for entrepreneurial startups. I toured that with Program Director Judy Mahan of Cal Poly's Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship. As a result of that meeting, we will be hosting a search engine optimization workshop for budding entrepreneurs here in our council chambers on Thursday, January 25th from 5:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m., and we'll have information about that workshop on our website within the next few weeks. And if we get a good turnout for that workshop, then we will be planning future workshops geared toward our budding entrepreneurs in this area. And then lastly, I just wanted to mention that last Sunday I attended the Elegant Evening event in the village, and it really was a fantastic event. Of course, it was my first Elegant Evening in the village, and it was very well attended with live music, beautiful holiday lights, delicious refreshments in each store, and, of course, shopping. Thanks to our VIA and also our village merchants for putting on a very successful event. And that concludes my report, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
I have one. Do you know what the basis of the two no votes were regarding the medical marijuana? Because I found that kind of surprising that it was a 2-2 vote.
I don't know. We can get back to you on that. Yeah. No, we don't have that information.
If you could just at some point flesh that out, because I find it interesting, because I thought it was going to be a 5-0 vote.
So. I was there, Tim. I can talk to you after the meeting.
I would echo your comments on the elegant evening, and thanks to all of the village businesses that were involved. It was a great time. Everybody there seemed to be really having a great time. It was a wonderful evening. I do have a question on the tract map item that I know we haven't looked at a tract map approval in, you know, some time, but my recollection is the last time that we entertained it or were advised that a tract map had been approved, that we'd requested copies of the map so that we get a little bit more than just a tract number. And again, I would request, because I see that we don't have the map at hand, that can we please get copies of that going forward?
Yes, absolutely. I will follow up with staff and we'll provide those maps to council.
Thank you very much. Item 9 is the consent agenda. Are there any items that the...
No.
Councilmember Guthrie, any items for... Okay. I had... I don't really have anything to pull, but I just have a comment on two of the items that are related. That's 9A and 9C, where I note that point C on the 9A was paid $20,000, which seems an unusually high amount for that contract. And that may be related to services that had been previously rendered. I'm not sure. But then on 9C, which is approval of the minutes, I note that the minutes reflect, first of all, the proposal was that Point C's contract be extended for $35,000 through 12/31/15 was the proposal. And I think that correctly shows on the minutes, but the approval on discussion at the council is, again, I believe correctly shown in the minutes, that it was approved through December 31st of 16. And again, that was for $35,000, but I note that the $20,000 billing that shows up on this period is a very significant part of the $35,000 that was authorized for all next year. So that's just my comment and thoughts on that, if we can look into making sure that those are all accurate. Is there public comment on any of the agenda consent agenda items? Consent agenda items comment. Okay, hearing none. Do we have a motion to approve?
I would move for approval of the consent agenda items 9A through 9G.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve consent agenda items 9A through 9G. May we have a roll call, please?
Mayor Pro Tem Barnidge?
Yes.
Council Member Guthrie?
Yes.
Council Member Brown?
Yes.
And Mayor Hill?
Yes. Passes 4-0 with one absent. Item 10 is public hearings, and I'll ask our city clerk to please introduce the item.
Yes, item 10A is consideration of preliminary approval of community development block grant projects for year 2016.
Thank you. And I understand Director McLeish has the staff report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Kelly Heffernan, associate planner, will give the staff report for this item.
Thank you, members of the council. CDBG is a federal program that provides local governments with financial resources to address a wide range of community development needs, such as affordable housing, social services, job creation, and public facility improvements. The allocation of funds is flexible, provided that the activities meet one of the three national objectives, which include benefiting low and moderate income persons, aiding in the prevention or elimination of slums or blight, or addressing urgent community development needs that pose a serious or immediate threat to public health or welfare. So this next program year, it is estimated that $75,512 will be available to the city starting in the fall of 2016, which reflects a 2% increase from last year. This is a turnaround from recent years, when the city experienced a consistent decrease in funds due to federal cutbacks to the CDBG program. However, recent funding remains considerably less than what the city received between 2001 and 2011, which averaged around $112,000. Similar to last year, the county will help the city with administration of the program. The allocation of funds for public services is capped at 15%, or $11,327 for the 2016 program year. Traditionally, requests have far exceeded available funds. However, this is the first year that the city did not receive any funding requests for public services. The likely reason for this is because public service organizations are more aware of the stricter CDBG regulations that have been made has made the process quite onerous, and the city now provides an alternative and completely separate funding opportunity through the Community Service Grant Program. I know this is hard to read. Sorry about that. The other CDB projects fall under the public facilities, economic development, area benefit, and administration categories. Staff recommends allocating $60,410 for ADA improvements and then $15,102 for administration. The city did not receive any applications for economic development projects, and HUD has determined that the city's previous code enforcement and facade improvement programs are invalid based on the lack of blight in our area. These two programs would have been under the area benefit category. For the public facilities program, the staff recommends allocating $60,410 to improve ADA accessibility for the Women's Club Center. This project will remove existing architectural barriers and prevent facility users who use wheelchairs from accessing the exterior patio area, and will provide mandatory secondary emergency access and exiting in the building as shown on this slide. This project was identified as a priority given the large number of facility users and the current kitchen remodel effort that's going on right now. It is anticipated that all improvements will be done at the same time, the kitchen and these ADA improvements, so that would not inconvenience the public too much. Then there are also hundreds of locations throughout the city in need of ADA compliant ramps. Given the city's annual allocation of CDBG funds and local sales tax funds appropriated to ADA improvements, it will take several decades for the city to complete all of these improvements. There are also other ADA improvements needed at various city-owned facilities and parks. So therefore, staff believes allocating available CDBG funds to ADA improvements is appropriate, especially given the city's community service grant program to help meet public service funding needs. And regarding administration, staff recommends allocating up to the 20% cap of local funds for this category. $9,816 of the total would be deducted by the county for its administration costs for the city and the county per the city and the county cooperation agreement. And the city will receive $5,286 for its portion of administration. Completely separate from the CDBG program, the city established the Arroyo Grande Community Services Grant Program last year in response to CDBG funding limitations and restrictions. This program provides $20,000 to eligible nonprofit organizations. Last year, the city received a total of 12 applications, totaling about $61,000. The deadline to submit a completed application is this Friday, December 11th. A community service grant review panel has been established, consisting of one member from each of the city's boards, commissions, and committees. This panel will convene in early next year to review the applications, and it is expected that a recommendation for funding will be brought to the council at the same time as the final CDBG allocation is considered. That will likely be in March next year. It could be as early as February. So to conclude, staff recommends that council provide preliminary approval of the proposed CDBG allocations as presented. The purpose of the preliminary review is to provide for and encourage citizen participation in the process, give the public time to review what each participating jurisdiction is recommending, and to assist the county in preparing its draft action plan. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for staff? Councilmember Gatry?
What's the timing on the remodel of the Women's Center? Is that going to happen sometime this year?
Yes, most definitely. I mean,
it'll be 2016 anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. I do know there's issues with this when we don't spend the money in time, so I do want to verify that we have a project that's ready to go and the rest of the funding is in place.
Oh, I believe so.
Regarding the kitchen remodel, I think that's still being ferreted out. However,
And as much as we would like to do them together, we can proceed if needed with the ADA improvements. So the kitchen portion, kitchen remodel portion is still, we're very hopeful, but we still need to verify that we have funding together on that one.
All right. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. Kelly, when we do, if we do the improvements, the ADA improvements to the women's club, is it, will that be all done over there? Will we be compliant, or are there still more repairs to do at that location for ADA?
I believe that this is all that will be needed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All
really
right.
Good project.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
Councilmember Brown.
I'm just trying to figure out how you came to the conclusion that the Women's Center should be done versus city streets or some other place where we get high traffic areas in the city. So what was the thought process in determining that all the money should go to one location?
Well, I know currently we're working on using CDBG funds for various curb cuts throughout the city and also to improve ADA accessibility for the Soto Sports Complex. So we already are doing using previous year CDBG money to do a lot of those improvements, and this is one that was felt that was needed given the high use at that particular center, that facility.
And I would like to invite Jeff English. He may be able to expand on the discussions and the consideration of the Women's Center as floating up to the top priority for these ADA funds.
Thank you. And I did want to elaborate on the reason for the selection of this project as opposed to many of the other needs that we have. I think I've mentioned to the council before that we have approximately $5 million worth of curb ramps to either install or replace because they're non-compliant in town. So significant challenges with regard to ADA improvements. The reason for this project is we're really leveraging funds from the community. One of the requirements of the kitchen remodel, which is a nonprofit-generated project, the Lions Club and the Women's Center, Women's Club are funding those. One of their requirements is to complete some ADA accessibility improvements as a part of that project. The funds, and I appreciate the explanation, we're not sure if we have enough funds. We're actually evaluating the plans and doing a cost analysis on the plans now to determine if they have enough money to complete that project. But by having the CDBG funds cover the cost of the improved patio and the other accessibility, it allows us to finish that project and really partner with that those two nonprofits. So that was the purpose, really, is a leveraging opportunity. So hopefully that answers your question.
That makes total sense. Thank you.
Thank you for that explanation. That is very helpful. Is there public comment on this item? Public comment on the CDBG fund allocation. Hearing none, we'll come back to council for comment. Councilmember Guthrie.
Well, as I do have concerns about the money sitting around that and then if we have other options, if it is other curb cuts or something, that you might come back to us if it's going to turn out that in 2016, for whatever it is, because it does make sense to do all of the improvements up there at once, that we would we have an opportunity to reallocate those funds somewhere else if, in fact, they're not going to make it. But other than that, I do agree that the Women's Center is an excellent project, and it does complete another project that is important to this community. So I'm fine with this allocation. I'm a little bit concerned that we have money sitting around, I guess, from last year that we still haven't used on curb cuts in other locations. So maybe we have too many pieces of projects going on instead of maybe one big one. But so I'm fine with staff's direction here.
I'd be happy to address the issue with regard to funds. We do have two projects that are in the work. They're both designed or in the middle of design. One is the Soto Sports Complex, and then the other is the mid-block crosswalks. Those will be completed this coming spring. So we're on schedule to complete those. We're actually doing much better than most communities on our spend down requirements. This project, we actually designed at the Women's Center to be independent of the kitchen remodel, so it can be done separately. And if they're not ahead of schedule or not on time to complete that project, we can still move forward and be done separately. Whenever they have the money, they can come back and do those improvements. So hopefully that answers your question.
Thank you.
Mayor Perkins.
Thank you. I'm fine with moving forward tonight. I think that the Women's Club is a great place to use those funds. It's nice that it will be done once we spend the money and do that. I'm glad that we separated these two, where we have the barriers for the disabilities, the ADA, and then the community service grants. It's so nice that it's so much cleaner than how we used to do it a couple years ago. So this works out nicely, and I'm ready to move forward. Thank you.
Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just want to make a couple observations. One is that this was always a tough meeting for all of us. It would usually be a small amount of money, and there would be all these great people coming forward asking for funds, and we would basically be having to tell some people yes and some people no. And for the small amount of money, it was a tough thing to do. And so I really appreciate this process. And this process really was a brainchild of Councilman Guthrie. He brought it forward and saying we could do this in a different way based on the monitoring and cost of doing these grants. He found a better way to do it and brought it forward. And it's actually more money than the grant money. So it really does a good job, compared to what we're doing. It's so much better this way. So I just want to make that observation, and I'm ready to move forward.
Thank you. Having served in another jurisdiction that traditionally allocated, I guess for lack of a better term, the CDBG funding, and then seeing a lot of that being gobbled up by reporting and oversight requirements that left little for the projects that were actually desired to be completed, I would concur with your comment that what we do is here, and thanks to Councilman Guthrie's idea, is a superior means of dealing with it. Thank you for the consideration of the Women's Club project. That looks like a very reasonable project considering other options and progress that's been made to date at Soto and other locations. It seems to be a great opportunity, as Director English said, to leverage the work of the Lions Club and the Women's Club. I'm fully prepared to support the item, so I'd look for a motion at this time.
I would move approval to City Council considering a preliminary approval of community development block grant projects for the year 2016.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we proceed with the proposed allocation. May we have a roll call, please?
Mayor Pro Tem Barnidge?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Hill?
Yes. Passes 4-0 with one absent. 11 is old business. We have none. Item 12 is new business. And for item 12A, I'll ask the city clerk to please introduce the item.
Yes. Item 12A is consideration of an ordinance amending Chapter 16.84 of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code regarding water-efficient landscape requirements and adopting by reference the model water-efficient landscape plans of the State of California and mandatory plumbing for gray water reuse for new residential and mixed-use development. This is Development Code Amendment Case Number 15-002, applicant City of Arroyo Grande.
Thank you very much. And Director McClish.
Thank you again, Mr. Mayor and members of the Council. This item this evening is a first step, the introduction of the ordinance. It's done a little differently in accordance with state law, where the introduction of the ordinance occurs as a business item, and then the public hearing will occur on the adoption hearing. So I just want to make you aware of that, and that's will be outlined later in the presentation by Kelly Heffernan.
Okay. So as background, in 2011, the city adopted a water-efficient landscape ordinance that deviated from the state's more rigorous submittal and review requirements, and that was in an effort to reduce overall administrative costs for the city. The city's current ordinance limits the amount of turf that can be installed for new construction and rehabilitated landscapes and has other efficiency requirements related to irrigation. A landscape documentation package, which the state designed, is only required for landscape areas of 1 acre or more. Again, this is the current ordinance that we have. The city has never had to enforce submittal of a landscape documentation package since all landscapes have been for much, much smaller areas. In April of this year, the governor issued an executive order directing the Department of Water Resources to update the state's model water-efficient landscape ordinance in order to address the current drought and to build resiliency for future droughts. The updated model ordinance became state law just in September. The new law requires all land use agencies to either adopt the model ordinance or adopt a different water-efficient landscape ordinance that is at least as effective as the model ordinance. If an agency did not adopt a different ordinance by December 1st of this year, the model ordinance goes into effect by default. Although the model ordinance is complex and will require more staff time to administer, staff recommends that the city adopt the model ordinance by reference for several reasons. First, future amendments to the model ordinance can be made without requiring amendments to the city's municipal code. Second, the language of the model ordinance, which is quite lengthy, does not have to be included in the municipal code. And then finally, it would take more staff time to create a modified ordinance, which may or may not qualify as adequate as being as effective as the state's model ordinance in conserving water. Given the stricter monitoring and reporting requirements, the state is looking closer at what the actions jurisdictions are taking in regards to complying with these regulations. The model ordinance requires many components to address water efficiency, and these include landscape documentation submittals, water-efficient landscape worksheet submittals, soil management, landscape and irrigation design plans, irrigation scheduling and efficiency, recycled water if available, gray water systems as an incentive, stormwater and rainwater retention, water waste prevention, public education, and then annual reporting. Specific requirements of the ordinance include reduced amount of turf allowed in new developments and limiting the amount of landscape that can be planted with high water use plants, reduced size threshold of landscape projects from 2,500 to 500 square feet. So before, that was the threshold. It's all the way down to 500 square feet. And that's for residential, commercial, industrial, and institutional properties. And that's only for any project that is pursuing a building permit or a design review or any kind of a land use permit. Dedicated irrigation meters for residential landscapes over 5,000 square feet, and then for non-residential projects for 1,000 square feet. Irrigation systems to have pressure regulators and master shutoff valves. All irrigation emission devices must meet national standard to ensure that only high-efficiency sprinklers are installed. Flow sensors that detect and report high-flow conditions due to broken pipes or pop sprinkler heads for landscape areas greater than 5,000 square feet. The minimum width of areas that can use spray irrigation was changed from 8 feet to 10 feet wide. Areas less than 10 feet wide must be irrigated with subsurface drip or other non-spray technology. Turf is also prohibited in parkways less than 10 feet wide. Rehabilitated landscapes of 2,500 square feet or more that require a building permit or land use permit are subject to the ordinance, as well as the existing landscapes of over 1 acre in size. And land use agencies are required, of course, to annually report on adoption and enforcement. Sorry. Okay, projects with landscape areas under 2,500 square feet are allowed to comply with the prescriptive measures contained in Appendix D of the ordinance, which is a simplified compliance. All other landscapes must submit a landscape documentation package that includes a number of elements, which are shown on this slide. Given these numerous requirements, it's anticipated that most new homes will have landscape areas of less than 2,500 square feet. So in other words, we anticipate that most landscape plans that come in are not going to be subject to the stricter requirements. So at least that's some kind of relief. The model ordinance also includes incentives for gray water reuse and improvements for on-site stormwater capture. Landscapes under 2,500 square feet that are irrigated entirely with gray water or captured water are subject only to the irrigation system requirements of Appendix D, which is the prescriptive compliance option. The city allows for certain types of gray water or rainwater reuse systems as long as they meet plumbing and building code requirements. State mandates for water reuse systems for new construction will likely not occur until after being further examined through the building code update process. However, the Planning Commission recommends that the ordinance include a requirement that all new residential and mixed-use projects install plumbing for gray water reuse. This does not mean that a complete gray water system be installed, only the basic components to allow for gray water reuse hookups. The process to do this is exponentially simpler and less expensive for new development than it is for existing development and provides a means for much greater water conservation. A gray water system can reuse about 30 to 60% of indoor water from washing machines, showers, bathtubs, and bathroom sinks. Water from the kitchen sink, dishwasher, and toilets is considered black water, which entails a much more complex and expensive system that is not being proposed. The Planning Commission recommends that three requirements be included in the ordinance to encourage gray water reuse. First, all new dwellings shall include either a separate multiple pipe outlet or a diverter valve and an outside stub-out installation on closed washing machine hookups, allowing separate discharge of gray water for direct irrigation. Second, all new dwellings shall include building drains for bathroom sinks, showers, and bathtubs, segregated from drains for all other plumbing fixtures, and connected a minimum of 3 feet from the limits of the foundation to allow for future installation of a distributed gray water system. And third, all gray water systems shall be designed and operated according to the provisions of Chapter 16 of the California Plumbing Code. So the simplest gray water system is laundry to landscape and is the only system that does not require a building permit. If you add a pump, then a permit is required. For all gray water systems, the water must be reused within 24 hours for health and safety purposes. Other gray water systems that require a permit include a branch drain, which allows water sources from showers and bathroom sinks and is gravity-driven, pump systems, which use a temporary storage tank for less than 24 hours and pumps water through tubing to the landscape, dual drainage plumbing, which enables access to all the household gray water in one pipe using a three-way valve and is typically seen in new construction or a really major remodel. Sand filter to drip irrigation, which requires a backflow prevention assembly, which, since the system allows municipal water to supplement as needed, and then a manufactured gray water system. Again, the individual homeowner would be responsible for installing the gray water system of choice, but the installation would be much cheaper than a complete home retrofit. Providing the plumbing for gray water reuse would be a great incentive to conserve water, as I already mentioned. Costs vary widely for these various systems, depending on the size and complexity of the site, but they can be as cheap as $100 on up to $20,000. Providing the initial plumbing will obviously save a homeowner money by completing the system, so these numbers would be much less. So if they had part of it done already, They have the incentive, and it would be cheaper. The cost to provide just the plumbing for gray water and not the entire system depends on the size of the unit, the number of bathtubs, showers, and sinks, and location of the washing machine. Costs include the purchase and installation of PVC pipe, valves, and stub outs, which would likely be in the low hundreds of dollars. So there's basically time and materials is what the cost is. Adopting the proposed ordinance would have the following advantages. It would reduce municipal water usage for the city. It would bring the city into conformance with the state model ordinance requirements, and it would allow the city to follow state standards without having to add the model ordinance in its entirety to the city's municipal code. Disadvantages, the model ordinance includes new reporting by cities to the state. City staff time will be required to review landscape plans, create a system of tracking and reporting, prepare reports, and transmit the annual reports to the state. And the size of landscapes subject to the ordinance has been lowered from 2,500 to 500 square feet for projects requiring a permit, plan check, or design review. A greater number of applicants will therefore be subject to the new regulations, which will add costs to the overall project in the form of developing landscape and irrigation plans and installing water-efficient irrigation equipment. So to conclude, the Planning Commission recommends that Council first introduce an ordinance amending Chapter 16.84 of the City's Municipal Code, adopting by reference the Model Water Efficient Landscape Ordinance by the State of California, including mandatory plumbing for gray water reuse capabilities for new residential and mixed-use development. And then second, schedule January 12th as the date for a public hearing to adopt the ordinance. As alternatives, the Council might consider modifying the ordinance to exclude gray water plumbing requirements, direct staff to develop an alternative ordinance that is at least as effective as the model ordinance, or, as usual, provide any other direction to staff. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions for staff?
None. Thank you.
Councilmember Guthrie.
I do have just a follow-up on the conversation we had earlier today. Are any of the other cities adopting, since the difference here is that we're basically adopting what we would have to adopt anyway, or something very similar, except for the gray water requirement. So are any of the other cities requiring, are we seeing Grover Beach and Pismo Beach and Paso Robles adopting this gray water requirement for new buildings?
No, we are the only one in the county that is looking into this particular alternative.
Okay. And if in the future the state were to require, you know, instead of it being an incentive, it became a requirement, Would we have to redo our assuming we pass it the way you guys are proposing by reference? Would we have to redo the our ordinance in order to see that those were included?
Well, it depends on what they would be proposing or what they'd be requiring. If what we're doing is adopting the model by reference, so if they included gray water requirements and we adopt it by reference, we would then, I would assume, eliminate the portion that we are adding and just adopt what the state is doing.
So in fact, by sort of getting out in front of the state, we're potentially going to have to redo our ordinance sometime in the future to match up with the state if they, in fact, do what we're doing or do something close.
Well, by adopting the ordinance by reference, part of the reason why we're doing it is that we anticipate that the state's going to be making changes in the future. And this is a real simple way of the city addressing that situation.
And if you can clarify, because now I'm a little bit confused about the 2,500 versus 500 feet. You said that that we would see a bunch of landscapes come in at 2,500 mm-hmm. square feet because that exempted them from some part of this. But then you said that we're lowering that threshold to 500.
So there's a couple of things going on. The model ordinance, the threshold is 500 square feet. It used to be 2,500 square feet. So consequently, anybody that comes in with a landscape plan that needs to have a building permit for whatever reason is going to have to comply with the ordinance. However, that Appendix D makes it much simpler for smaller projects, for projects that have 2,500 square feet or less of landscaping, or between 500 and 2,500 square feet.
So you have two, I'll say two thresholds. One, that you're going to be covered. If you're under 500, you don't have to do anything.
Right.
But if you're under 2,500, you have to do less than if you're over 2,500.
You have to do much more, yeah.
Okay. And then one last thing, and then this, and I'm sorry I didn't ask this earlier, the definition of what landscape is. I pictured anything that's dirt is landscape. Is that accurate? So a 5,000 square foot lot, half of it's used up with the driveway and hardscape and the house, then you'd be at 2,500.
It's just wherever you're applying water to grow plants.
So could you get exempted by just not putting in a sprinkler system?
Sure. If you don't want to have any landscaping, you don't have to do anything.
So isn't that what we would actually see, is a whole bunch of homes with no sprinkler system that you would then install later?
Or I should really make it clear that, you know, if somebody has a... we've been doing the cash for grass. We've been seeing people taking out 5,000 square feet of turf and redoing their landscape. That's a lot of landscaping. If they're not coming in for a building permit or a design review or any kind of land use approval, and they just want to re-landscape, but they're not subject to this ordinance. So,
no, I understand. I'm just talking about in a new home.
Yeah.
So
in a new home, if they want to concrete the whole thing in, they're not subject to the ordinance. If they want to just have, if they want no irrigation whatsoever, no plants, then they're not.
If they say, I'm not going to plant it out, then they'd be at zero landscape. I'm a little surprised at that there's not a better definition than that, but okay.
Questions?
Yes, thank you. Kelly, so I understand the new construction, but give me an example of where this would apply to people that come in that want to. So they wouldn't be coming, if they just want to re-landscape their backyard, they're not going to come get a permit. But what if they are, like, installing something that's connected to the house, or doing underground, or, you know, putting in a hot tub, and so they have stuff going on underground, so they have to come get a permit. And then they are going to landscape as well, so sort of a remodel on a backyard or a front yard. Would they be subject to these requirements now if they're over the 500 square feet of new landscaping?
Yes.
Okay. When you have the gray water components installed, if the builder were to do that, what exactly is involved after that? So when you move in, do you know... because I'm not really familiar. I mean, I know what it is, but do you know how, if we had the builder install, how much work it is? I saw the cost, but is it fairly easy to have someone else come out and do the rest and not require much of the homeowner?
I mean, well, it depends on what the homeowner wants to do, of course, yeah. I mean, you know, the easiest thing is, you know, like I said, the laundry to landscape. I mean, literally, it's just a gravity-fed system. There's manuals, all kinds of guidebooks online. Slow Green Build has an excellent one that's in your packet. So you can do it on your own for something that's really simple. But if you're looking at anything that has, you know, a pump associated, you know, it incrementally gets more complicated, and then you would hire a professional plumber to do
that. I guess I'm just asking, if we go forward with requiring builders to install this, which I think is a good idea, I wonder how easy it is. I hope it will get used. I hope people mm-hmm. go the extra mile to actually use it, because I hate to require something that someone moves in and just, you know, isn't interested. But it sounds like it's fairly easy, especially if you hire a professional.
Yeah, and I would anticipate, if this was something we were going to move forward with, we would provide a lot of information as much as possible online. And, you know, maybe get some packets that can be given out to homeowners when they purchase these properties that have the systems or have the plumbing.
Okay. And then as far as the requirements of the model ordinance, who will be checking on those? Will those be conditions of approval for projects?
They would be through plan check, building permit, plan check. Mm-hmm. So those go through all the different departments whenever anything comes in. And we haven't necessarily decided who's going to be doing that.
Okay. Okay, I think those are my only questions. Thank you. Thank you, Kelly.
Okay, my understanding is that the city has two options here. Option one is we can adopt the state's model ordinance, and option two would be to adopt a city ordinance that has equivalent water-saving measures as the state model ordinance. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So water savings, in my view, doesn't involve reporting in acres of forms and maintenance of databases as a non-funded mandate from the state. So am I correct in that we could adopt an equivalent ordinance with requirements for water consumption reduction in new construction and so forth that's proposed, but delete therefrom any of the unfunded mandates relating to reporting requirements, database management, and all of the stuff that goes with that?
We can adopt, you know, a different ordinance that is just as effective in reducing water consumption. However, we would still have to report to the state. We cannot get out of that requirement. If we did not report to the state, that would completely raise a red flag, you know, for them to come and inspect us and see what we're doing. We'd have to report no matter what.
And the state is requiring certain elements are included. If we did adopt a different but equivalent ordinance, we'd still have to hit some of the major factors that were outlined in the ordinance. And we found, so we did this last time. We adopted our own, and so we've gone through that exercise, and it worked out okay for us. But now it's getting to the point where we feel it's going to be harder to invent our own and then fight to make sure that they understand that it's going to be an equivalent ordinance than it would be just to adopt the state ordinance. Everybody's going to be using the same checklists that we give out to folks, and everybody's going to be, I anticipate, devising the same monitoring and reporting schemes to the state, not unlike I would anticipate what's happened in the stormwater realm and our stormwater reporting, where all the jurisdictions got together and sort of helped in the streamlining of that. So I would foresee that the first year will be the most painful, and then it will get better after that. And that given that the state said adopt this or something as equivalent, including X, Y, and Z, you know, in conjunction with the city attorney's office and staff, we took a good look at it and believe that the adoption of the state ordinance with the proposed modification, if you so choose, will be the simpler approach.
I would agree that the that equivalent should mean adopt all of the proposals that the state is effectively mandating. However, the reporting requirements seem to me costly in terms of both money and staff time to little purpose if we are in fact complying and our ordinance complies with all of the requirements that the state has. And I don't see, as a matter of fact, it takes a lot of water to make paper. And it seems to me that if we're in the spirit of water conservation, that cutting back on paperwork is something that's very desirable in terms of conserving water. So I would reserve comment until after public comment, but I am going to have to be strongly convinced that there's a reason to waste water to produce paper for unnecessary reports. Is there public comment on this item?
Can I ask a follow-up question before we do that? But don't we have to report to the state whether we adopt our own ordinance or we adopt the model ordinance? So there'll still be the same reporting requirements?
Yes, we still will need to report. And the equivalent requirement that you do equivalent water savings, there's also that you do equivalent water savings tracking. So we still are going to have to track and do the reporting. You know, we can, everybody, even the state, is trying to do things electronically, so we can try and cut down on paper reporting and paper tracking, but there still is going to be electronic reporting.
Okay, thank you for that.
Can I ask a follow-up question as well? Yeah. So at what point do we reach the threshold for someone to have to, so say you're remodeling, you had a 500-square-foot room, are you in that now, since you're going to re-landscape your property as well, you come in with a landscape problem, would you have to go in and do the gray water plumbing requirements that we're talking about here, or is that only new construction?
It's only new construction.
Okay. Just wanted to clarify because the landscape would kick in on a remodel, on a landscape remodel that you pulled a permit for, but in no way would you ever trip a permit for the gray water requirement and on any kind of a remodel.
Not the way it's written.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And I also found the landscape definition. Landscape area means all the planting areas, turf areas, and water features in a landscape design plan subject to the maximum applied water allowance calculation. The landscape area does not include footprints of buildings or structures, sidewalks, driveways, parking lots, decks, patios, gravel, or stone walks, other pervious or non-pervious hardscapes, and other non-irrigated areas designated for non-development, example, open spaces and existing native vegetation.
Thank you for the clarification. Is there public comment on this item?
Pat Dempsey, Arroyo Grande. I'm just wondering why none of the other cities are adopting this. Shouldn't we look into what the other cities are going to be doing and find out why aren't they adopting it? Maybe cities could get together in the county and adopt an ordinance that would be better than... this Uncle Brown there sending us what he thinks ought to be done. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other comment on the item? Okay, hearing none, come back to the council for discussion. Councilmember Guthrie.
Well, I guess I'll start to answer that one question, I think getting the cities together on a separate plan that was equal would be far more difficult than getting us all to at least adopt what the state is proposing. I think what my comments were specifically related to the gray water requirement. I'm all in favor of adopting by reference the state rules here. One, we're going to be required to do something. Reinventing the wheel is just not a good idea for a whole bunch of reasons here. But one of the main reasons I want to point out is that for anyone who is a home builder, whether they're a private home builder or a professional home builder, to have to deal with different codes in different cities is going to be problematic. And so just as we adopt the building code by reference and the energy codes by reference, unless we have some very specific reason for taking a different route, which I don't see here, then I'm all in favor of adopting them by reference. My problem here is this additional requirement that we're going to take something beyond what other cities are doing and require it in our community for, I'm going to say, no particular reason other than, we want to be on the leading edge, I guess, of water conservation. Again, there's the problem of the expectation of somebody who's doing landscape design or doing home building or home building design that all of a sudden, just because you're in Arroyo Grande, you have to make this adjustment. It's not that it's terribly expensive. It's not that it's terribly hard. It's just one more regulation that really doesn't have a big payoff here. This isn't a lot of water saved. You can do gray water right now out of your laundry. You really don't have to do too much to get that done for most laundries. And as was pointed out, I went to one of the Green Build water savings landscape programs they put together, and they pointed out that actually gray water is not as simple as you think it is. It's one thing if you just want to dump it out into onto the ground and let it soak in, but if you actually want to use it as a replacement water in your garden. You better plan your garden very, very carefully to deal with massive amounts of water, and then when you go on vacation, deal with no water. So I'm not sure that our requirement here, even though it would be nice to have, it is clearly easier to do on a new house than it is to retrofit, whether that is worth the hurdle that we're creating for builders and particularly for people doing who are building their own home or for local architects. So I would like to eliminate that, and if we get in that direction, I'll ask you how we could do that. This for me is very similar to when we did our carbon footprint and had a special requirement that at the sale of home, only in Arroyo Grande do you have to do some sort of energy improvement. We don't know what that is yet, but this is very similar to that. There's just not enough gain for us to be out on the leading edge. If this was one of the, you know, like an ag improvement or something like that was key to our community or was unique to our community, then I could see that, but I just don't see it here. So I'd like to see that piece of it eliminated, even though I understand, you know, Planning Commission recommended it and staff sees it as a nice tool. I just don't think it's worth the trouble. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm willing. I'd like to leave that in there because I'd like to hear what the builders think. I don't know exactly what's involved when you're building a house and you're pouring the foundation, maybe especially the laundry to the landscaping, which seems somewhat simple. It's maybe not a big deal for them to do that as far as the labor and what's involved. So I think it's the cutting edge right now, and it's something that people are talking about. I think that if we can do it and save some water that people are using that's going to be thrown out to water their plants, I think it's a good thing. You know, the low-flow toilets, when those first came out, everybody screamed and hollered about those because they felt like those weren't as good as the old toilets, and then it was just the norm. So I think I'd at least want to leave that in there for now until we go through this process and see what the remarks are and see what other communities that are using this think as well when we come back with the ordinance. And I am definitely in favor of adopting the model ordinance for all kinds of reasons that we don't have to reinvent the wheel, and we're going to have to report to the state anyway, and so I'm in favor of that tonight as well. Thank you.
Councilmember Brown.
Thank you. Well, first of all, my comments would mirror Councilman Guthrie's. I would want that piece taken out. It seems like we're creating a bit of a moving target, because if I understood your definition of by reference, if the state changed their ordinance, then our ordinance would basically be that new change. And so what you would have is people trying to figure out, and obviously you guys are going to probably be up on it all so you can explain it to the public when they come in. not that you need another thing to worry about. But, yeah, I would like to keep it simple. Not that I'm against further water savings, but it just seems like it's a moving target. Oh, you got to do the state by reference, and then, oh, by the way, you have to do this other piece that Arroyo Grande's asking for. And I think the other one that Councilman Guthrie brought up was when we did the climate action plan and we adopted that other piece. I'd like to go back and see if that was successful or helpful. Or when you talk about experience, and Councilwoman Barnett says, I'd like to know, you know, what the public said and what they did. That's the perfect example of whether that particular regulation was helpful or not that we adopted when we did the climate action plan. So, again, I would go along with Councilman Guthrie's suggestion if there's a way we can figure out how to do it. Assuming, again, that by reference means that it's whatever the state ends up doing and changing. I don't want to have to come back and do it again. The explanation was a little confusing, but if I understand it correctly, that's what I'd like to do.
So a further question before I comment is the requirement that just new construction be stubbed out for gray water, or would a gray water system have to be fully installed
It's just putting in the plumbing and the fixtures to allow for a full gray water system to be installed. So there will be a stub out for the laundry. So all they, you know, you can simply just have a hose coming out of that and have it go to your landscape or have it look a little bit better. But it's just putting the plumbing while the trenches are open, while the walls are open. It's an opportunity to lay down all the PVC pipe and then put in the fixtures, and that's it.
By fixtures, that would be a...
That'd be like the three-way valve.
A valve or a cap or some...
Right. It's not the system to actually do the irrigation. Take it outside. It's just the plumbing on the interior to the just outside of the house,
okay,
and then from
you.
There, that's where you would install your gray water system.
Thank you for that. I'm really not opposed to having new construction stubbed out for a gray water system. I am sympathetic to. My peers' comments about being on the leading edge of that and not wanting to have something that would have to be modified if the state comes back at some other time. However, I do think our water situation here is to the point that we need to be mindful, especially for new construction, which is what we're talking about, that stubbing for gray water in those applications may be something that we want to do. I do understand the requirement that we have to report to the state that we have indeed adopted an ordinance, and I am in favor of adopting the state model ordinance in its entirety as far as, again, the requirements go, but I'm not in favor of any additional requirements for record keeping or subsequent reporting. So while I have, I would agree with the technical rules that are in there, I'm opposed to additional reporting and the impacts on staff that would have and the additional cost to the city with no funding to provide for that. So with that, I would move that we adopt consideration that we adopt an ordinance amending Chapter 16.84 of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code regarding water-efficient landscape requirements and adopting by reference the Model Water-Efficient Landscape Ordinance of the State of California and mandatory plumbing for gray water reuse for new residential and mixed-use development, except therefrom reporting requirements in addition to the initial report of adoption that's required to be sent to the state. That would be Development Code Amendment Case Number 15002.
And I'm just going to jump in. I'm a little bit concerned. What you'd be doing then is we're really not adopting the model ordinance. We're adopting some variation of it. And I think we would need to go back then and figure out what we're adopting and what we're not. I'm a little worried whether that's clear. Because I can't tell you right now exactly what are all the reporting requirements that we're trying to opt out of. And what we're keeping in. Mm-hmm. It's when you adopt a model ordinance, you kind of have to adopt the whole thing generally, or you adopt your own with your own tweaks to it, which has been discussed. We then would just have to make sure is equally effective. So we can adopt our own and make tweaks, but that's not what's before you tonight. The only thing I think we could do tonight would be if we did want to exclude the gray water, I can easily carve that out of the resolution. But if we're going to adopt something other than the model ordinance, I think we would need to bring that back.
Mayor Hill, excuse me. What I'm hearing from staff is that regardless of whether or not we adopt the state ordinance, we are required by the state to do the reporting. So whether we have our own ordinance or we go with the state model ordinance, we're still required to do that reporting.
Motion on the floor.
Well, there's a motion, but there's not yet a second.
Yeah, I'm not going to second it, but I just want to remind people that
This discussion is nice, but there's a motion on the floor.
Okay, it appears that there's no second for the motion, so is there another motion?
I would move that we approve an ordinance or introduce an ordinance amending Chapter 16.84 of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code regarding water-efficient landscape requirements and adopting by reference the Model Water Efficient Landscape Ordinance of the State of California and mandatory plumbing for gray water reuse for new residential and mixed-use development. Development Code Amendment Case Number 15-002, with the location being citywide and the applicant being the City of Arroyo Grande.
Is there a second? Okay, it appears that that item also has failed for lack of a second. Do we have another motion to proceed?
Either you can try it or I can.
First I'll just ask for a little direction. Obviously, we'd like to carve out that section. I think it's just eliminating 16.84.020, but I'd like to kind of verify that.
Yes, although the main part, if you look at the ordinance that's on page 7 of item 12A, the main part that's going to come out is on page 8, 16.84.020, gray water applications. That gets completely eliminated. We do need, though, just to do a little wordsmithing. So in the ordinance title, the big block at the top, we would leave it as is, but we would start deleting at including mandatory plumbing for gray water reuse capabilities for new residential and mixed-use development. That would be stricken. Then in the whereases, we would keep 1, 2, 3, and 4, but we would strike 5, 6, 7, and 7 because they relate to the gray water. Then the last whereas, we would strike the last sentence of that, including mandatory plumbing provisions for gray water reuse capabilities for new residential and mixed-use development.
Can I ask a question? What I'm confused about is what, Tim, were you talking about if the gray water requirements, if the state comes back and we have to change our ordinance, what does that have to do with the gray water requirements?
It doesn't. It has to do with by reference because the gray water part, that's the special piece that Jim was talking about that was getting out in front of the actual ordinance.
I'd be happy to address that as well. As Councilman Brown is indicating, if we adopt a model ordinance by reference, we also include language that as that model ordinance may change, we change with it. So we don't have to come back every time they make a change.
Right,
so if it were to change and all of a sudden they include a gray water piece that conflicts with our gray water piece, then we would have to go back and adjust our ordinance so that we aren't preempted or conflicted somehow with what the state has done. It would depend what the state does to determine whether we would have to strike ours or modify ours. So I can't tell you what we'd have to do, but if they did make a change that affected gray water, it could then require us to come back and look at our ordinance.
Just for the gray water, in regards to gray water.
That's the only thing that we're proposing to add to the ordinance.
Right.
So that would be the only piece that could all of a sudden create a conflict.
Plus, we would be adopting the gray water ordinance by the state if that's what they ended up doing. So, anyway.
Like all the other cities would be. So, it's okay. Can I go ahead and attempt it? Okay. Help me out if I go wrong here. An ordinance of the City Council, I move we adopt an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande amending Chapter 16.84 of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code, adopting by reference the Model Water Efficient Landscape Ordinance of the State of California as contained in the California Code of Regulation Title 23 Waters Division
2.
I'm sorry. New sentence. Department of Water Resources, Chapter 2.7. And I think that's the end of that part.
Actually, model.
Do I go on? Okay. Model Water Efficient Landscape Ordinance, Sections 490 ET et al. Eliminating.
That's fine.
Mm-hmm. So do I have to now say eliminating the whereases? Mm-hmm. Can we just do that based on your comments?
Sure.
Okay. So eliminating the whereases as indicated by the city attorney and eliminating specifically item the 16.84.020, the gray water applications.
Second.
Did you wish to include in your motion to schedule January 12th?
Oh, yes. And I don't know if we have to do that as a separate motion, but yes, and schedule January 12th as the first reading of the ordinance or some version of that.
Public hearing.
Right. Is that acceptable to the second?
It is.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we proceed to adopt the model efficient landscape ordinance. May we have a roll call, please?
Can we have discussion, please?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So I'm going to go ahead and vote for this because obviously it's a good idea that we implement this. I really think that we're missing out on a good opportunity for not a whole lot of work for some people that are going to build homes and install a stub out. I think that's really short-sighted, and I'm disappointed by that. Thank you.
If I can respond to that I would just point out that if in the future, in next year or something, that it turns out that all the other cities adopt this and that this is, in fact, sort of the law of the county, then we could always revisit it and add it back in. But I would think that if it's that widespread, that the state's going to include it as well. And on top of that, we're talking about maybe 50 homes in the next year, maybe 100 homes in the next 2 years. So the minimum number of homes would be affected.
Still saving water.
That's the last words. Okay, you can go again.
Go ahead.
While we're on comment, I'm not convinced that it's necessary that we adopt all of the reporting that comes hat in hand with the ordinance. And while I'm sympathetic to it in general, I won't support it for that reason. Is there any other comment?
Only that this reporting issue is interesting to me because you have an opinion and I'm hearing staff say that the other ordinance would have to include exact reporting, and I don't know that to be a fact because I haven't seen it. So next time if this comes forward and staff wants to make that discussion as part of it, saying, look, we could do this, but it's going to be the same reporting requirement, I'd like to see it in black and white. I'm a doubting Thomas, I guess.
I'm going to suggest we might do that by a separate motion.
Yeah.
Okay, may we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Guthrie.
Yes.
Councilmember Brown.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Barnidge.
Yes.
And Mayor Hill.
Respectfully, no.
If I could just...
The item passes 3-1 with one absent.
I do wonder if we could, additionally, if we're not outside the agenda, request the staff, when they come back on the 12th, flesh out what the reporting requirements are, and what the minimum, because I think that's what everybody would like to see, including staff, what the minimum requirements would be and flesh out exactly what that would be. And I think that would speak to the mayor's, you may not resolve it, but it would certainly speak to your concern.
Yes, thank you. Moving on then to item 12B.
Item 12B is consideration of selection of Mayor Pro Tem.
City Manager Thompson.
Your microphone.
At the December 10th, 2002 meeting, the City Council established a policy regarding selection of the Mayor Pro Tem. At that time, the City Council agreed to appoint the Mayor Pro Tem on a one-year rotational basis by seniority of those members who have not yet served as Mayor Pro Tem. And based on the rotation and the policy, at this time, Councilmember Harmon would be the next in line for the position of Mayor Pro Tem. And I could note that the Tribune earlier this week stated that Councilman Dan Harmon was going to be considered for appointment as Mayor Pro Tem. And I contacted Councilmember Harmon, and she said that she felt that Councilmember Dan Harmon, would be pleased to serve, and so would Barbara Harmon. So I just wanted to pass that along to you. That concludes my report. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Is there any questions?
No.
I don't believe there's any questions. Is there any public comment on this item? Hearing none. I would move that the council appoint Councilmember Harmon as the mayor pro tem for the next one-year period.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that Councilmember Harmon be approved as the mayor pro tem for this following year. May we have a roll call, please?
Mayor Hill?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Pro Tem Barnidge?
Yes.
So once again, the person who's not present gets the assignment.
That's your last time, too.
Item 13 is City Council Reports. The South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District did not meet due to lack of a quorum last week. However, at the prior week meeting that was scheduled, there was a number of issues that happened, and we weren't able to report that at the last meeting. So I will mention some of those issues now. First of all, the plant is running well. Thank you to Superintendent John Clements and the operating staff for keeping us all in good shape there. We are proceeding with preliminary request for qualifications statement for the redundancy project at the plant. That is the plant is mostly got redundant process. However, the end process, which is called a trickling filter, does not have a redundant subsystem, and therefore if that equipment was taken out of service, the plant would pretty much immediately be in violation of the discharge permit. So that's something that's very important to the district, to have a redundant portion of the system so that that aging piece of equipment can be taken out of service for maintenance or reconstruction. Would also enable the plant to meet lower discharge requirements that are coming with the license renewal for the facility. With respect to billing for the services, historically, the sanitation district bill has been included by the cities and the OCSD, the member agencies, on the utility billing for the parent agency. And the district has recently voted, because the member agencies were not all willing to continue that practice, to engage the county tax collecting service, and that the bill for the processing of wastewater by the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District would then be billed through the county on the property tax rolls. We also anticipate that the Knudsen report, which was authorized by the board, would be presented at the next meeting. I understand that the staff has already received the draft of the report, and it's in review by staff and council. So that's the latest on the sanitation district. The Briscoe Halcyon committee did meet just this past couple days, and there's another things I asked a couple weeks ago that the Briscoe item be put on the council agenda to discuss continuing the closure beyond January 11th. That would have allowed enough time to get it on the agenda so that the council could discuss it. But I was met with resistance from the staff, who did not want to put that on the agenda for this meeting. And unfortunately, we have no further meeting in December, and the next meeting in January would not be in time to have that closure continued, should the council determine that that was the action that we wanted to do. So I was very discouraged that we couldn't get a public discussion on that in a timely fashion. I do note that our partners at Caltrans have been very accommodating and, in fact, issued the permit to continue the closure to January 11th in a month's time. So I appreciate the good cooperation we've had from our partners at Caltrans on that. What I seem to see in the whole Briscoe thing is just excuses why it can't be done, and kind of blaming the process. And I've been told that I'm frustrated with the process. I've been in the nuclear energy business for 40 years, and I'm something of an expert at complying with process. I don't really have any problem with process and complying with process, but we've spent, as was noted by an earlier commenter, $3 million to, in my view, get develop. We're talking about item one and item 4C as the options. That means there was a series of items two, a series of items three, and some additional items four that were fundamentally not feasible. And the city spent quite a bit of money developing technically unfeasible proposals that were predictably rejected by Caltrans through the process. So I think we were entering faulty plans into the process was fundamentally the bottom line. We were promised a project report first in August, and now this month. I have yet to see it. Where is the project report? Again, issues with the Caltrans process. Why aren't we cognizant enough of the Caltrans process to be able to predict that and to understand when things are necessary in that process? The whole thing to me just seems to be something of a disaster from a planning and implementation standpoint. In September, we knew there would be an environmental assessment for the project. I asked for option-specific discussion on that assessment, and I have yet to get an answer for that 3 months later. Is the assessment due to one of the other options being included in the process going forward? So again, months later, I'm still waiting for an answer, even though our partners at Caltrans can issue a permit in a month's time. Why can't we have input on this from the public now? I'm told that we have to wait until we get environmental reviews and so forth before we can roll anything out to the public. But the public is confused and upset. Why don't we have an ability to do longer term closures when we're paying to do that? Again, no technical viability with some of the processes that we've had. So frustration with that kind of thing, I think, characterizes what I see with the Briscoe. Mr. Guthrie may have a more objective commentary than that, but that's kind of what I see going forward. The Oversight Board to the successor agency to the dissolved Arroyo Grande Redevelopment Agency has not met, neither is the CJPIA. So with that, Mayor Pro Tem Barnage.
Thank you. The Zone 3 Water Advisory Board has not met. The Homeless Services Oversight Council, we met, and we had, for the next 10 years, we put together goals that we would like to work towards, and the members voted on those. We actually ranked them around the room with sticky notes. There was a lot of good ideas, but really the top 10, or actually it was probably, no, it was 10 years, top four or five goals all related came back to housing the homeless first, which you've been hearing so much about. Really successful, and so even though there were good ideas about treatment, et cetera, and job training, it was really all came back to housing first, a couple different ways to do that. So I asked for actually the Laurel from the county to give me sort of a summary so that I could present it, and I'll do that at our next meeting. She hasn't gotten that to me yet. So it was pretty interesting because I think it's a real shift. what would have been the goals when they first started this this campaign to end homelessness in SLO County. So, thank you.
Councilmember Guthrie.
Yeah, just before I get back, there's two quick questions on the Sand District. One, where are you guys at with hiring a new director?
We've engaged CPS HR Consulting to do a search for, they're related actually to the state. It's like a subsidiary of the state, to do a search to find a full-time district administrator. Yes, thank you for that.
And on the billing, which you know, I think it's great that you guys got out in front, because for a whole bunch of reasons, that's a much more efficient way of doing it. One, it's going to be education of the public, because they're going to be confused. They're going to forget they didn't pay. But the other question I had has to do with collecting the one missing month in Oceana. Do you guys have a program in place? Are you going to be able to collect that? Or
We'll be able to collect it through back billing. We may have to wait until the fiscal year starts and collect that as an unpaid revenue, again, through a property tax assessment. But that's probably what the option is at that, unless some other arrangement can be worked out.
I appreciate that. Thank you. So I'll just go here. There's no SLOCOG meeting since I last reported, no South County Transit meeting since I last reported, since our last report was just a couple weeks ago, no Tourism Committee. And then on Briscoe Halcyon, just a couple deals, and I'll try to stay within the agenda. I appreciate that it's easy to get out. One is that I do have to point out that also came out in that committee meeting was that on the Thursday before, which was just 4 days ago, we actually got that permit. It may have been very well been that Caltrans turned it around in a month, but it was actually almost within hours of us not being able to. Had they said no, we would have been out there over this today and tomorrow actually putting that back together. So while Caltrans, that's relatively responsive, for Caltrans, it still was barely responsive enough. And had we waited, we would have been very much under the gun to have completed the reopening of the. I think I'm. Are you talking? Okay. So I do just want to clarify that piece of it. I will report that also what came out of that was to look at the possibility. Not the possibility, but to include the option when we do review the actual options, alternative one or alternative four or no alternative, that we would include a discussion of whether we could close the ramps while we were waiting for construction. So there's that. I do want to be sure that the public knows that out of that committee came at least a potential plan. As has been reported in some, I don't want to go through the whole deal because I do recognize that there's some limits on what we really should be saying here. But I will just say that it's not quite as simple, that it was quite that obvious that every plan was DOA with Caltrans over the last 12 years. That in fact there was indications from Caltrans that some of those programs were going to work. Some of them were obviously not. But that we kept looking at alternatives that achieved. That achieve multiple objectives. So I do want to. I recognize that I'm also frustrated that it's taken as long as it has. But I'm not prepared to say that was some sort of plan by staff to circumvent the system. That in fact it just flat out took that long. So that's just my report on Briscoe Halcyon.
Councilmember Brown.
I have nothing to report. Neither committee met between our last reporting period. I will have some comments during council communications that I'll share at that time.
Okay, council communications then is the next item. Is there any public comment on the reports? Hearing none.
Wait, I think John was going to get up.
On the reports.
It's not. We took it off. Not we. I should.
was removed for us. Councilmember Brown for council communication.
Okay, I want to make a couple observations. I was really disturbed by Pat's discussion about having to get three votes to get something on the agenda, and I think we as a council should revisit that issue. We are all elected at large. We represent the whole city of Arroyo Grande, and minority opinions are just as important as majority opinions. And I can assure you, having served both as a council member and as a planning commission, there's been a sea change in the way staff has determined what we can and can't do in the last year. And I think we need to revisit it. And what I mean by that is I think we need to revisit whether or not we should have a three-member vote to appeal an item. It never used to be that way. I can assure you it never was. Secondly, to hear that the mayor tried to put something on the agenda and it was poo-pooed by staff on a time-sensitive issue, I can assure you that our prior mayor, Tony Ferrara, played an integral role along with Tim Carmel and Steve Adams in determining what came on the agenda. And I believe it's absolutely inappropriate for staff to be telling the mayor that he can't determine as mayor that something should be on the council's agenda. It happened all the time under Tony Ferrara. He was a strong individual, granted, strong-willed, kind of understood how to get his way. Maybe that's why. But procedurally, it was never challenged, and it was allowed to go on for, 16 years, however long the mayor was there. So I'd like to revisit both the issue of what constitutes getting something on the agenda, because I think in a minority opinion is just as important as the majority. And we used to, by gentleman's agreement, agree to any council person's request, and then it changed, and Councilman Guthrie has reminded me that on occasion quite often, and I think we need to revisit that issue. And appeals, too. I've just got through a whole discussion with city staff today on Castillo del Mar, and I'm really frustrated with the way that was handled, and I intend to, in the coming months, flesh that out. I asked for letters to be given to all the members of the council, and that hasn't happened. To say I'm frustrated is an understatement. I think it's highly disrespectful of the mayor, to the mayor of what's happened, and I think our procedures have changed in the last year and need to be revisited. So I'm specifically asking the council to put these items on a future agenda so that we can discuss them in full public view with public participation on this process, because Pat brought up an idea that I hadn't thought about, and that is that the minority view should carry just as much weight because we are elected officials and have just as much right to our opinion as any other member to put it before a public forum and have it discussed. So with that, those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Councilmember Guthrie.
Yeah, if I can actually just follow up on that, because I do agree that we do need some clarification here. I'd just like to see it expanded a bit, because one of my concerns is we have seen abuse is the wrong word, but we've seen sort of an extension of what is the proper jurisdiction, if you will, of a council item, whether it's taking a position on a state initiative that has nothing to do with the city, or there has to be some mechanism by which we can vote, frankly, or somehow that we establish a process by what's appropriate and what's not, because I don't want to become Berkeley, you know. So I would want that included in it. I also think that this is something that's never been clarified, and I don't know whether we can do it from council. I think we can just through our policies, but really do establish what the unique responsibilities and rights of the mayor are, because the mayor is elected as the mayor separately, and in many jurisdictions would have exactly the right we're talking about, but not a right, by the way, to every council person. Yeah. It'd be an unequal right, but it is a separate. So I'd like to see that included as well. And I'll just say, yeah, there's some reasons why the gentleman's agreement went away, because there were, in fact, believe it or not, and I think I pointed this out to you before, the very first time that the gentleman's agreement fell apart was closing the ramps at Briscoe Halcyon many years ago. So I'm interested in hearing how we might do that. I have to admit I'm a little pessimistic that there's a way to do that without a vote, but I'd certainly be interested in that. Just one last deal on the appeals. The whole point of the gentleman's agreement on the appeals was to make sure that nobody had to vote, so that you did not have to express an opinion in advance on an appeal. And that, so I can't think of an appeal that's ever been denied. I think mostly for that reason, because everybody wants to protect their ability to provide an unbiased opinion at a future time. So
I think you're absolutely correct.
Yeah, so other items have been rejected, but I don't think any appeal ever has been. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem.
And I would just add that I think the way the gentleman's agreement, yeah, we had that. But I think that it's appropriate if someone wants to put something on the agenda where it's a council member or the mayor, they bring it to the council under council communications and get a consensus. Because not just us, but in the future, it could be abused where everybody wants to put something on the agenda unilaterally, and then we end up with staff struggling to calendar that and come up with staff reports in a timely manner and please all the council members or the mayor. So I see that as a real problem. I'm not in favor of unilaterally being able to put something on. I'm in favor of someone coming to council communications, which we've done in the past, and we get a vote like I can't think of any right now. The styrofoam.
Can I ask for clarification? Mm-hmm. Are you willing to consider a discussion during a public hearing as to whether it should be two votes or three? Like Pat brought up at the mic? I'm not talking for a decision right now. I don't want a decision. I understand we all have strong opinions. What I'm asking for is that it would come forward at another meeting and we have a full discussion on it.
Yeah, and if I can just jump in, as we all know, this isn't on the agenda tonight. It sounds like I'm hearing that there are concerns about our existing policies for how things get on the agenda, how we appeal decisions of other bodies. Let me see if I...
Specifically how things get on the agenda.
And how, whether the mayor has any additional rights to get something on an agenda, or if it's a majority, or what that might be. And I don't think anyone's asking to commit to any changes tonight, but just to bring back an item to discuss our existing policy. And I think there may be some of this, I have to go back and look, might be in the code as well. The code generally talks about a majority of the council under council powers. So may involve some modification of the code, I'm not sure, or we may be able to do it in the bylaws, which is where we really break it down more specifically. So if there's a consensus to look at potential modifications, we can put something together and bring that back for you. But we wouldn't be looking for specifics tonight because it's not on the agenda.
In terms of... frivolous discussion, but I was quite frankly stunned that something that's as critically important to the city as the Briscoe Halcyon discussion was the response that I got from the city manager and the staff specifically was very disturbing to me. My comment will stand
so
on
is
its
there
own.
A, is there a consensus to bring back a look at the policy?
I believe there is.
I'm seeing three nodding, or yes. Four nodding, yes. Okay.
I have another motion to make, since it seems like we need three votes at this point. I move that we put the Briscoe Halcyon enclosure on the next January agenda.
Is there a consensus to do that? And what would that be for discussion?
That.
We do have a very heavy agenda.
Discussion
that.
Only.
The Briscoe item is already planned for the January 12th agenda.
But that's not the first item, though, is it? The first meeting?
It is. It's the first meeting. It's a report. It's not.
The day after the closure ends.
That's right.
Yeah. My point
says it all
exactly.
Right there. That says
Let's
it all.
Move on with the council communications. Another thing I would like for the city to review is parking requirements for development. And it's gotten to the critical point where I believe we shouldn't approve any more projects in the city until we get the parking issues resolved. I look at Trader Joe's, and the lack of parking there adversely affects adjacent businesses. I look at CESLOC. I look at CVS and Panda Express. I would call that a planning disaster. I look at Panera and Hampton Inn and the parking there. I would call that a planning disaster. It's not just limited to commercial. I look at people's self-help, the parking there, all up and down the street. I view that as a planning disaster. Walnut Grove, we had people come in at the last meeting and tell us about the catastrophe there with parking. That's a disaster. It's still coming out of Fair Oaks Medical Center by the hospital that we just talked about the last week and continued. That's going to be a disaster in progress. We have Mason Bar and Roberts. Roberts is vacant right now, and with the new hotel, another potential disaster in progress.
I have to point out that you just offered an opinion on an item that you're going to consider next month.
I just think this is way past. You can ask for it to be on the agenda, Mr. Mayor, but for you to go into this length of discussion, we need to have that with the public here properly noticed.
Let's do it. Let's bring it forward. Kennedy Fitness, that's another one.
Is that a
catastrophe. Let's consider parking on a future agenda.
I'll second your motion for discussion for just a moment. In other words, I don't have an opinion one way or the other on parking, but I'm willing to have it discussed in a future agenda.
Does your motion include a moratorium on all commercial projects until we've arrived at any parking? Because I don't support that.
I think we need to consider whether our parking regulations are adequate to the needs of the city going forward.
I'm fine with the discussion of parking, but of parking coming back as an item. But I, given the extent of your comments here on many projects, I wouldn't be supportive of any sort of restriction on commercial projects in the interim. That's my only point. And that's not actually in the motion, but
I agree because the projects that are currently in the pipeline are looking at regulations that currently exist. And so I don't have an opinion on that necessarily other than that I would hope that we comply with our current regulations. However, in my view, those are not adequate, and I think we can demonstrate that all over the city.
So, Mr. Mayor, would this item be to review parking requirements, or would it include a moratorium?
It would be to review parking requirements.
Okay, so to review parking requirements in our development code. Do you second that, Mr. Brown?
Yes.
And do we have consensus amongst the council?
Discussion. Isn't the planning – I saw in the IOIs that this was already an item that was directed to city staff by the Planning Commission to look into this. So let's let them do it and let the process play out. And then when it comes to us, it comes to us. I don't know why we have – this isn't an emergency as far as I'm concerned.
I do believe that planning it does have it on their list of projects. Are you looking for a specific date, Mayor Hill, or – are you just asking, you're just letting us know that this is something significant importance to you and you'd like to see it soon?
It's significantly important to the city and the residents of the city, and I'd like to see it addressed at the council level, and we can perhaps provide direction to the Planning Commission of what they may want to look at in terms of...
So you'd like to come back to the council for some council input before it moves through the
yes.
process of going to the Planning Commission?
Okay, may I speak to that? The Planning Commission is was just tasked with this, so if they haven't yet gone into looking into it, I don't know why we need to jump in. Let them do what they're looking at, and then we'll come back later. I mean,
yeah, we do have a process in the code where we have committees, we have, you know, various advisory bodies. Staff develops potential modifications to policy based on concerns they've heard, based on, you know, changing factors. They do submit those suggested revisions to the code. They do go through a process. Sometimes, you know, something like this with the development code would go to the Planning Commission. Planning Commission vets it, goes through it, gets public comment. Here's what the public thinks about it. Here's from developers how what they think about it. Here's from the various property owners, constituents. And then then those recommendations are brought to the council. So we are kind of circumventing our own process. But this is not on the agenda. We really do need to move off from it. So it sounds like the mayor's asking to have it come back here before that. Are you in support of that, Mr. Brown? Councilman Brown? Okay, so the Councilman Brown is as well, and we would look to the U2 to see if there's a consensus.
I'm not in support of it coming to council first.
No, I would wait for the Planning Commission to weigh in.
Okay, then that would fail, and that's what would happen.
With that, I'll try an alternative motion, and that would be that we would direct staff to expedite the parking process through the Planning Commission to the council.
In other words, find a date to not just put it.
Let's just tell them that we're telling them we want it done too.
And I think we hear that loud and clear, that clearly this is a priority that you want to see coming forward and without delay.
I'll second that.
So I'm in favor of it.
I think we have a consensus of that. There's a fairly wide perception among some members of the community that there's favoritism and so forth in our process for reviewing development in the community. And I saw a letter that was very remarkable from ostensibly one of the developers, and this was distributed by the Chamber of Commerce, thank you, that indicated that a member of city staff who is charged with regulation at some level of development in the city was perhaps a partner proponent of one of the developments. And that really bothers me. I mean, I watched the Planning Commission meeting on TV, the most recent one, you know, wink, whatever, and I'm very concerned. I don't know how else to express it. I'm just very concerned. And when I see stuff like that, it's difficult to defend that there's not favoritism treatment at some level. So I think we need to take a hard look at ourselves and our processes and make sure that we are, in all cases, even-handed. Those conclude my comments.
I would just add to that I weighed in on that, and it was, for any questions, please contact this city staff person. It was not someone from staff that was in support of the project. It was for questions and concerns, because that was the planner on the project.
That's one interpretation. Thank you for that. We have no closed session items this evening. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.